Fuzzy. Hashtag Avec Class.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Beeble. We've got three of the season recap podcasts to go. This is the third last of those ones. We're going to be covering the Toronto Raptors, and to talk about the Toronto Raptors, I am joined by Basketball Monster's own Kyle McEwen. Kyle, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Josh.
It's good to have you on. Good to talk about some Toronto Raptors action. But just a quick reminder to everyone else to make sure you're checking out Locked On NBA and our Locked On Podcast Network mock draft. The final portion of that mock draft will go up today. Each of the GMs, the respective hosts of the Locked On Podcast with or Locked On Team Podcast with myself, Jake Madison, David Locke, and Jeremy Wu, giving analysis of all of those picks. So all five of those episodes are out now, so make sure you're checking that out. Kyle, before we get into the Toronto Raptors, maybe an hour or so before we started recording this, some weird stuff has gone down with Kawhi Leonard. Greg Ehrenberg found this, and some other people did as well, that the odds of Kawhi Leonard going to the Phoenix Suns have gone from plus 1,500, and now they're all the way down. I think they're settled at about plus 200 at the moment in the last hour. So I've got my Woj notifications on. So if something weird goes on with Kawhi to Phoenix during this podcast, we will report it. But that was interesting to see that stuff go on.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious that you can possibly glean from the different betting statistics whether or not a trade is likely to happen.
It's such a big jump as well. Like, for those odds where Phoenix is like the, I don't know, on this list here, he was the initial one, he was like the eighth, they were the eighth favorite team, and now they're by far the most likely destination. Yeah, real quick jump, and we'll see what goes on. We have got notifications ready, and if anything goes down, we will convert this podcast into a Kawhi Leonard trade show, I am sure. But let's talk Toronto Raptors. Now, they finished 59-23. They pushed for that 60th win in the last game of the season, cost them Fred VanVleet in the process, finished with the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, and of course were embarrassingly swept by the Cleveland Cavaliers in the second round of the playoffs. That should never have happened. This is a Cavs team who was pushed to seven games by both the Pacers and the Celtics, and of course were swept by the Warriors. So overall, Kyle, do you think that you would class this season from the number one seeded Raptors as a disappointment?
No, not at all.
Yep, I think that's fair enough. They played well. The Cavs are a tough matchup for them. It's obviously shit to go out in that way, but overall, I think you have to be happy with this season. But it does feel like some weird stuff could go down with this team. You hear some reports. I think it was I'm not sure exactly who it was, but someone said that Kyle Lowry is very available in trades, as is and the whole roster is available. But there could be some weird stuff going on. They've already fired Dwayne Casey, Nick Nurse, one of their assistant coaches, has been promoted. Jerry Stackhouse, the coach of their G League team, has gone. Other assistants have left. This could be a really different looking Raptors team next season.
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously, by the firing of Dwayne Casey or him leaving the team, and them and Masai Ujiri hiring Nick Nurse to take over that head coaching role, the Raptors are obviously willing to make changes this offseason. Nurse talked about Lowry actually having a bigger role next year, or at least having the ball in his hands more than what he did this previous season. So it's hard to know exactly which direction they're going to go, but it seems like every offseason I take a look at the Raptors, and a lot of people do, and they say, oh, they're bound to make a lot of big changes this year. And then they don't necessarily make a lot of big changes. They just continue to build from within and kind of evolve that way. And we saw that last year with the way they changed up the offense. And I think under Nick Nurse, the fact that he was one of the primary assistants on the staff last year, or the primary assistant coach, could lead to must just seeing the same guys come back, but maybe have different philosophical changes on both the offensive and defensive side of the court.
They were 14th in pace last season. They had the second best offense and the fifth best defense. Of course, that all makes sense given how good their record was by the time the season ended. Yeah, really took care of the ball, fourth in turnover percentage, really good defensively, limited the opposition to the third best mark in terms of effective field goal percentage. Yeah, really strong in multiple areas, blocked the most, second most shots per game in the NBA as well, took the third most amount of three-pointers. That highlights what you mentioned in terms of the change in their offense. Sixth highest in assists per game, things that we didn't necessarily associate with the Raptors in previous seasons. So big changes, and it actually improved quite a bit with their team. In terms of the draft, Kyle, they have no picks at all, no first, no second round in free agency. Just a bunch of restricted guys. Bebe Noguera, Freddie VanVleet, Lorenzo Brown, and Malcolm Miller are all restricted free agents. No unrestricted free agents on their books. Well, they have Alfonso McKinney, who is non-guaranteed for next season. So big changes, if they come, they're going to have to be via trade. And again, Ujiri is not afraid to mix things up, as we saw with the change of the head coach from Dwayne Casey going now to Nick Nurse for this upcoming season. Let's start with Lowry, who you mentioned already. The 25th ranked player this season played 78 games, which is something that he has been criticized for in the past, especially by me, by being a guy who did falter and miss games in the most important part of the fantasy season, that is the playoffs. 32 minutes, and that's a large reason why he was able to stay healthy, is he played fewer minutes during the year. 16, 5.5, and 7, over 3 threes, a steal, 43 and 85 as his percentages. Seemed to avoid that late season flame out type of stuff we saw from Lowry in the past, but he's a guy that's not young, Kyle. He's turned 32 already. You know, he's a guy that drops almost 6 points per game and five fewer minutes. Do you see him hovering at this level if everything remains the same in Toronto, or could another decline be occurring for Kyle as his efficiency and overall impact on this team potentially drops?
Nick Nurse talked a lot in his press conference about wanting to be innovative and creative and to think of things before they happen in the NBA, or to look for creative ways to do things before the trends go that way in the NBA. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what that means. Nick Nurse didn't necessarily speak in specifics to his different plans on the offensive or defensive side of the ball, but he just talked about wanting to be innovative, and that's something that Masai Ujiri also credited Nurse for being in the reasoning for why they hired him and brought him up to be the head coach. As far as Kyle Lowry's workload next season, it'll be interesting to see if he plays closer to the 32 minutes that the Raptors worked him down to this last season, or if he'll be playing back higher towards the 37 minutes he was averaging the two seasons before that. I think we'll likely see Lowry stay in that 32-minute range. Maybe it gets closer to 34 or 35, because maybe next year the Raptors don't lean on their bench as much as they did this season. The Raptors' first unit was so good, and their second unit was so good, that it was easy for Casey to lean on the second unit a lot, to give them a lot of the players on the second unit big minutes, whether that was Fred VanVleet on a given night, DeLon Wright, they didn't really turn into Norm Powell this season, and that was depressing, but we saw Pascal Siakam and Jakob Poeltl get plenty of minutes, CJ Miles got plenty of minutes, so The minutes got spread around a lot this season, and it'll be interesting to see if Nick Nurse was one of the voices that helped push the Raptors to extending their rotation, or if it's something that he will shrink back next year in hopes of squeezing out some wins in his first year as head coach.
The interesting thing with the distribution of what Lowry did this season is, yeah, the minutes dropped, his usage dropped by almost 3.5 percentage points, but he saw his rebound rate climb. His previous four seasons, he'd been at 4.6, 4.9, 4.6, and 4.6 rebounds per 36. This season, he went up to 6. He saw his assist rate jump from 6.7 up to 7.8. So, you know, more aggression on the boards, more in terms of his assist numbers. Now, his assist numbers, they look the same as the year before, 7.1 versus 7, but he played five fewer minutes, so that rate was up, but it was the scoring that really dipped, and despite, you know, playing five fewer minutes, he still was able to be a third-round type player, and I do agree with you. I think he does remain in that 32 zone of playing time rather than push up to 36 or 37 again. But of course, if Fred VanVleet goes somewhere else, DeLon Wright's had plenty of injury concerns, then maybe there are going to be stretches where Lowry does have to extend into larger minutes, and maybe that puts his long-term health at risk again. I think he has a potential to maybe fall lower again next season in terms of his overall ranking, whether that's due to increased workload, age-related decline, injuries due to maybe a smaller amount of depth that they have, as opposed to how things are panned out for them this season. But still, a pretty successful season, and he was their overall best fantasy producer. DeMar DeRozan.
Absolutely. Hey, can I just want to back up the whole support of the fact that despite playing five fewer minutes per game and his scoring going down this season, Lowry picking it up in the rebounds and getting assists at a better rate is just, I mean, he had seven assists per game in 37 minutes two seasons ago, and then this season he had 6.9 assists per game in 32 minutes. So it's just the fact that he maintained that production level for his assist and improved his rebounds is, I think it's awesome, and she should get a lot of credit for that. Do you think that the rebounds stay the same next season under Nick Nurse? Do they continue to ask him to attack those boards and then just get out on the break a little bit quicker?
I feel like they will, because without watching every single minute of every single game, it was more of their sharing philosophy that it was like, okay, whoever grabs the board grabs it, and then we can give someone else the ball to run things down the floor. And playing alongside another point guard like Van Vliet more often meant that Lowry, with his doggedness, with his hustle ability, he can go in there and he can feel more comfortable of giving it to DeRozan, of giving it to Van Vliet, of giving it to Wright, and they can run the offense for certain plays. He doesn't have to dominate the ball as much as he did in previous seasons. So using his strength there, his aggression in that area, I think is something that we'll continue to do, because they don't have to rely on him to bring the ball up the court every single time, as what he'd done pretty much the majority of the time in those previous seasons. DeMar DeRozan.
Cool.
Great year from DeRozan, 34 minutes, 80 games, 23 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal a game, over a 3 a game, 46, 83, and 31% from 3. It looked like he was developing into a solid 3-pointer that did drop back off, but getting over a 3 per game from DeRozan is a bit of a development, not something we'd really seen from him before. Had yet to hit over a 3 per game in any of his previous seasons. I said the percentage did dip as the season went on. But he gets to the line a lot. But like Lowry, Kyle, he just didn't need to have the ball in his hands as often this season. He had previously gone the last 2 years, or 3 out of the last 4 years, over 8 free throw attempts per game. He was down to 6.8 this season. So that did reduce the overall value. Even though he shot a very similar percentage from the line, it decreased his overall value, because it wasn't just him and Lowry creating every single offensive possession for this team. And that was reflected there. But what he did do, and again, goes back to my point on Lowry with the rebounds, we saw his assist rate climb as well, because he was able to initiate the offense more. He was passing the ball around with over 5 assists per game this season. It's a huge jump from what he'd done in the past. He's never going to be a high steals guy, but if you're getting 23 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and getting to the line as much as he is, he feels like a lock for another type of top 50 season for at least the next couple of years. So I don't see too much changing with what DeRozan does in his overall game.
I just love that with the Raptors, they said last offseason that they were going to come into this year and they were going to do things a little bit differently, and they said they were going to share the ball more, and Dwayne Casey said he had challenged his primary guys in DeRozan and Lowry to be more facilitators rather than just carrying that scoring load and to share that scoring load with the rest of the team. So to see that come out in the production that they put out throughout the year, the fact that Lowry maintained his assists despite playing fewer minutes, and the fact that DeRozan pretty much maintained his scoring. Obviously, it dropped 4 points, but for him to up his assists, I just think it's cool to actually see a plan play out the way it did for the Raptors and for the personnel to have executed it.
Yeah, we hear people say shit in the offseason all the time. Oh, we're going to do more of this. We're going to speed it up. We're going to play up tempo. We're going to do, and in general, it doesn't change. Nothing happens. It's all the same. But the Raptors said they're going to do it, and they did it. And it played out exactly how they said they were going to do it, and it was obviously wildly successful in the regular season, not talking about what happened in the playoffs. Jonas Valanciunas, a player that I like quite a bit, was dicked around quite a bit this season for the Raptors, ended up still being the 77th ranked overall player 77 games, only 22 minutes per game, 12.5 and 8.5. He hit half a three, he had half a steal, he blocked a shot, and of course, his elite percentage is 57 from the field and 81% from the free throw line. He also hit 41% of his three-pointers, started taking them this season. And I don't think that there's any reason to doubt that that Valanciunas can hit those threes at that, not maybe not 40%, but at least mid-30s and become a weapon there. Maybe not a Brook Lopez volume guy, maybe Marc Gasol, Dewayne Dedman type. But he hit them, he took them regularly, and hit them at a good rate. And I think he's able to continue that. But he was in stretches this season where he was playing minutes in the teens. We look at what he was doing through December and January. He was getting 18 minutes, 16 minutes, 15 minutes. And it was nonsense. Whenever he was able to play, he put up big numbers. And we saw that as the season progressed, the minutes started to rise again, and he was getting 28 or 29, and he was showing the type of top 50 potential that he has when those minutes come. Now, Dwayne Casey always hated using him, hated the defense that he provided, and would clearly limit him. So I feel like there's some reason to be a little bit optimistic with Valanciunas, because we don't exactly know what Nick Nurse's thought process is on having Valanciunas, on having a guy who can take offensive load and actually can create stuff for DeRozan and Lowry and open things up for the rest of the team, whether Nurse values that, whether Nurse thinks that he can run some successful enough defense with him out there, or at least be more successful offensively to deal with the defensive lapses. But if he is getting 29 minutes a night, it's a clear top 50 player to me. He's still only 25 years of age, which is amazing to me that he's only 25. And I thought that he looked really good this season. The advanced stats love him. But it all comes down to, will the coach play him?
I think he's 26, but your point is still made.
Oh, he just turned 26, yep. Sorry.
Yeah, it's amazing that in 3.5 less minutes, Valanciunas put up essentially the same or better stats across the board this season. In regard to how Nick Nurse is going to use him, I don't know if we're going to see only 20 minutes of Valanciunas next season, or if we are going to see Valanciunas' role get expanded. Some of the stuff that Nick Nurse talked about in his press conference was being innovative on the defensive end and putting players in positions they haven't played before. And when I hear things like that, it makes me think, okay, modern NBA, you're going to start using super small guys at all five positions, and you're just going to do some crazy stuff defensively with switching to try and mitigate any defensive issues you have there by not having the size on the court. But maybe it means something different. Maybe it means trying to mitigate having Jonas Valanciunas on the court more and using him in different ways on the perimeter to make him better out there so that you can use him in an expanded role on offense. Maybe it means trusting your big men to do more of the offensive distribution, or running things more out of the high post than they have in the past by putting the ball in to the big man's hands. So it'll be interesting to see how things change with a new coach for Jonas Valanciunas. I think you have to be cautious about any expectations in regard to him because he has been minimalized in a lot of respects thus far in his career.
There is also a significant chance, and I said this for big chunks of last season, that Jakob Poeltl could be the starting center for this team next season. We saw Poeltl have a great second year, a really strong defensive stuff, a monster on the boards. Not that Valanciunas isn't, doesn't have anywhere near the same offensive game, but that's a significant risk there as well. But harking back on this central theme of this Raptors team, we're talking about a guy, Valanciunas, who saw his assist rate go from one assist per 36, which is bad, but it went to 1.7, and that's a significant increase. We're talking almost double the assist rate, and back in 2014-15, he was at 0.7 assists, so we're talking over double from just 2 years ago in terms of using him more in a distribution-type role. Not that he's not Nikola Jokic, he's not DeMarcus Cousins, he's not these centers, he's not Kevin Love that can distribute the ball, but having an increase there does enable these other guys to filter out, and all these other per 36 type numbers really did improve. He averaged 20.5 and 14 per 36 this season, but there is that risk again that maybe Poeltl becomes the guy that plays 25 and Valanciunas is an 18 minute Greg Monro type off the bench that comes in, scores, and does what he does and still puts up big enough numbers, but it's not going to be that high level contribution that we've seen from Valanciunas when he gets those big minutes as what happened down the stretch in this season. Serge Ibaka, 28 years of age, will turn 29 towards the start of the season. He, I don't know, I don't know what to think with Ibaka. He looked finished in the early parts of the season, improved later, and then looked bad at the end. He takes bad shots. His defense is nowhere near what it was. He doesn't block shots anymore. What the hell is he anymore? They thought they were going to bring him over and make him the small ball center. That just barely happened because his defense was struggling so much. He is down from back in his prime, 13, 14. He was averaging 3 blocks per 36. He's down to 1.7 this season. That is a massive decline. Rebounding, he doesn't do it. He shoots threes, but you know, takes bad shots. I don't know what to make of Ibaka anymore as a player. Is he still a guy that we should be looking at as a starter caliber player? Because he only played 27 minutes per game this season, and Pascal Siakam outplayed him lots.
I mean, he's not terrible. He's just not exciting, or he doesn't jump. Nothing that Serge Ibaka does really jumps off the page statistically for fantasy. So I don't expect us to see anything big change with Serge Ibaka next year, unless the Raptors end up saying, hey, Ibaka's our starting center. We've traded away Jonas Valanciunas. Poeltl's going to be the primary backup. And they're both going to see, you know, or Ibaka's still going to see time at power forward as well. So the new coach thing obviously throws a big question mark into everything that we're talking about. But as far as what we've seen from Ibaka this last season and what to expect going forward, I wouldn't expect any kind of resurgence or a super expanded role next year under Nurse.
His playoffs were really disappointing. He was benched for game 3 of that Cleveland series. Probably had his best game with 11 and 8 and 4 blocks, but just was getting consistent minutes under 20 before that. 12 minutes the game before, 18 minutes the game after. He had a string of 6 games in a row of single-digit scoring in the playoffs. Really couldn't hit shots, made poor decisions. It was not a good playoffs for Ibaka, and it mirrored a lot of the early season production that he had. And with how Siakam played, yeah, there's a chance that we see the 28 or 27 minutes per game that Serge played this season. Maybe that dips to 25 or 24 as he continues to age and decline. And I think there's a realistic chance that he is not even a standard league player next season. Now, he probably still would be drafted because there is some name recognition there, but I think there's a real chance he finishes outside the top 100 next season. He's probably going to be a guy that's not on very many of my fantasy teams. Now, they're the major contributors for this team, but there's quite a bit of interest in these guys off the bench. Dillon Wright is the best of the rest of the group, the 156th ranked player this season, 26 years of age, so he's quite old as a guy who's still on his rookie contract. 21 minutes per game, did suffer an injury during the year, 8-3-3, a steal, half a block, 47-83 and 36, so strong percentages. He racks up assists, he racks up steals, he's a great shot blocker as a guard. With Van Vliet's free agency up in the air, it doesn't appear like Dillon is going anywhere, but again, trade rumors could appear. If he became a starting point guard for a team, whether it's this team or another one, he'd be a guy that I would want to have on my fantasy team, like ahead of a guy, say, like maybe a Darren Collison or a George Hill. In that sort of a zone, can easily be a top 100 player because that rebound, assist, steals, block combo, along with pretty decent efficiency, is really interesting. And he took his true shooting up from 54 to 58 last season, and free throws up by 8 percentage points. So big improvements in his third NBA season.
No, right. He had a really nice season most of the time. Maybe a couple of minor lulls at times, but he had a good overall season. And do you have a comp that you like to use for him? Because I have a hard time settling on anybody who I feel like really mirrors his game.
You put me on the spot a little bit here with this one.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, because me and working out player comps on the fly, I'm really bad at it. I'm sure there is someone. He is like a non-high scoring. Let's say he's a better shooting, worst defending Marcus Smart, maybe a guy who has more playmaking ability than you think, but he can shoot better, but still a good defender, but not in Smart's level. I just look at those guys who get you strong rebounds, strong assists, strong steals, can block some shots. Maybe that's not the greatest comparison, not as big as Smart, but he can still play the one, the two, and the three like Smart can. He can play all those three positions on offense and on defense as well.
I see like a hybrid Devin Harris slash Sean Livingston in his profile. But other than that, I really don't. I wouldn't try to nail him to either one of those guys.
He played minutes according to our estimates, he had 25% of his minutes at point guard, 55 at shooting guard, and 25 at small forward. So really versatile, as I said, offensively, defensively. Strong on the steals, and two steals per 36 minutes, a block per 36, good efficiency numbers. He is a guy to watch, and a guy that, he is a little bit older, so maybe there's not much long-term value in him, but over the next 2 to 3 seasons, I would predict that he would have at least one top 100 fantasy season in those next 3 seasons. It's not going to be long-lived. He's not going to be a guy that's putting up these numbers into his early 30s. He's not going to be doing like what Kyle Lowry is doing at the age of 32. But he's got the profile of a guy who can put up some pretty decent numbers. So that is interesting. Now, I did reference Jakob Poeltl early on. Yeah, easily better season from him in his second year than his first, unsurprisingly. He's 22 years of age. He played all 82 games in 19 minutes. 7-5, half a steal, over a block, and the excellent 66% field goals. 59% from the lines, not ideal, but still he doesn't go there really at all. And had a monster true shooting of 66%. We had big stretches of the season, Kyle, where Poeltl was putting up top 100 type numbers that did dip at times, but we saw the flashes from him, the high shot blocking numbers, the very, very good field goal percentage, the strong rebounding numbers, and he had a couple of really solid offensive games as well. If he becomes a starter, then he, like a guy like, say, Jarrett Allen in Brooklyn, if he starts and plays 25 minutes, then he's got that top 70 upside, I think, pretty clearly with that rebounding, blocks, field goal percentage combination, and can have some offensive improvement as well. So I do like Jakob Poeltl quite a bit. Where do you sit on him?
I like him overall. I don't know what his ceiling is. I don't know if Poeltl is just a great second unit backup guy, somebody who is a pretty darn good defender, and someone who can switch on defense as well, or at least adequately given his size. But I don't know if his offensive game is wide-ranging enough to make him a starter in this league or to be a consistently big minutes starter. It'll be interesting to see how he develops. So do you think there's more to his game offensively than what we're seeing? Because right now, all he really does is roll to the rack off of his off of setting picks.
There's a little bit more, but he's not going to be a high usage guy. I don't think he's going to develop a massive 3-point shot or anything along those lines. It's going to come from his ability to stay on the court defensively and be versatile enough offensively as a fifth guy in terms of being that pick and roll guy. I'm not sure if we can ever see his shooting develop to any degree. He barely took any shots from mid-range, but still hit them at a pretty decent rate, 50% on his shots between 10 to 16%, but it was only 5% of his attempts there, 44% on his shots from 3 to 10 feet, and that was 20%, 21% of his shots. So, there's a little bit there of development, but it is more about his defense. His advanced defensive numbers look pretty solid as well. He blocks shots at a pretty strong rate. He was second on this team in block percentage behind Bebe Noguera, who we know is a really good shot blocker, but Poeltl, I think, is a significantly better defender. There is some upside there, but it is his ceiling, as you mentioned, is pretty capped by what he can do offensively, but he can still be solid enough in those categories. The problem we do have, I said, his free throw shooting is poor and he doesn't get to the line very often, but his free throw rate is actually pretty high. So if he's playing more minutes, then that can become a significant negative in the free throw percentage category as well. Fred VanVleet. I think nearly everybody would be surprised he's nominated for the sixth man of the year this year. He played only 20 minutes per game and was the 181st ranked player. 8.5 points, 1.5 threes, 2.5 boards, 3 assists, a steal, 43-83. He was still behind DeLon Wright in terms of overall fantasy value. They played the same amount of minutes, but VanVleet felt like at times he was having a significantly larger on-court impact. The defense is always going to be a worry with Fred. It's not horrendous, but it's not fantastic. But he was great for this team. But how do you see his fantasy profile? Is there something there where you look at it and go, this looks like it could be a guy that could find himself in a starting role somewhere?
I think Fred, I don't want to say that. I don't want to call Fred VanVleet a starting point guard in the NBA. At 6 foot tall, I just don't see that he has the physical size to justify being a starter. He does some really nice things offensively. He's a confident guy going to the rack. He hits his open three-point shots at a good clip or a good percentage, so that helps. When he does get to the line, which isn't terribly often, he gets those shots. And, you know, he's a good passer, especially he finds his big men on the roll a lot. So I think there's things to really appreciate about what Fred VanVleet is, but I don't think that he's a starter level player in the NBA. I think he's going to have to kind of get put in. He didn't start any games this year. I know that he played plenty of big minutes. He
started game three over Serge Ibaka in the Cavs series. That was his only start.
I know he's played plenty of good minutes against good players, but I just don't know that he's ever been put into a position where the other team actually game plans for Fred VanVleet. So if he ever got the defense that a starting point guard would get, I'm afraid that he would largely disappoint people who build their expectations off of what he did this last season.
I think that's completely fair, and I do agree with you. Now, a couple of point guards that people really do get the old Dutch Riders going for are VanVleet and Terry Rozier. I have them in a similar boat, is that they're all fine, but I think people are really overvaluing their potential upside as, you know, high quality starters, and I've heard that for both of them. Who would you rather, Rozier or VanVleet?
Scary Terry just has a little bit more of that intimidation factor on the defensive end, and I think, you know, that Marcus Smart attitude on defense a little bit, so I'd probably lean towards Scary Terry if I had to choose between those two.
I would do the same. Pascal Siakam, he was a surprise starter in his rookie season, basically did nothing while he was there. He'd just start and sit around and just do nothing until Serge Ibaka came, and then he went back to the bench. But this season, he was really, really solid. He outplayed Ibaka many times this season, but to me, he's a guy whose fantasy profile, it's not that good. 20 minutes per game, 7 points, 4.5 rebounds, 0.8 steals, half a block, 51 and 61 as his percentages. He was one of the worst three-point shooters in the NBA. I think he was at about 5% for a big stretch of the year. Did improve that up to 24%. He was at 14% the previous season, but he was really helped by a stretch over his last 27 games, including the playoffs. He hit 48% of his threes. Again, he was shooting at an absolutely horrendous level. Not a guy with high block rates or high steal rates or rebound rates. Okay, he doesn't score all that well. I like what he does on court. He's interesting, he's athletic, he's fun out there, but to me, he's one of those guys, Kyle, that is always going to be a better real-life contributor than what he is in fantasy leagues. Even if they decided to move on from Ibaka or to say, you know, Siakam's now our starter and playing 27-9, I think he'd struggle to be a standard league guy.
Yeah, I think Pascal Siakam's a role player. I know he had a good season, and he had some games where you see his energy shine and you think, oh, this guy needs a lot more court time. But a lot of his game is, you know, he shot 22% from three-point land, so he's not going to stretch it. And a lot of his game is just being that hustle guy who finds the open spot, gets away from his defender, who loses him a lot of the time because they're not expecting him to do anything on offense. And then Pascal gets a shot really close to the rim that he can either dunk or just kind of float in. So I there's not a lot when I look at his stat profile that screams out at me and says, oh, this is somebody who, you know, is going to shine moving forward. I think he's good. I think he's adequate. I think he plays hard. But as you were saying, I think he shows up better in real life than he does in fantasy.
On his three-point percentage, in November he shot 20%. In December he shot 3.7% in 14 games, which is obviously horrendous. 21% in January, and then started to pick it up. 31% in February, 37% in March, and 33% in April. So it did start to pick it up there. And actually his February numbers were pretty impressive. 22 minutes, 11 points, 4.5 boards, and 2.5 assists. And that's something that did improve significantly this season. His assist rate went from 0.7 per 36. That's Nick Young levels of bad. Up to 3.2 assists per 36. So if he can add a playmaking 4 type role on a similar level to, say, what Paul Millsap does, he's not Paul Millsap, especially offensively, but that is something where I go, okay, well, that's something that's developed. The other thing that dropped is his block rate went from 1.9 down to 0.9, so that's somewhat of a concern. But if those assists become more real, that gives him something. I just don't think that he's ever going to be a top 50, probably even top 100 candidate for fantasy, even though he is solid and I do like what he does on the court. A couple of guys I think we need to touch on before we close this up, Kyle, is Norman Powell, who we thought had a massive opportunity to have a big year. There was a position there on the wing with Damari Carroll gone, and he started out as the starter there. We saw the season before when DeMar DeRozan would get hurt or when Carroll was out, Norm Powell would start and Norm Powell would crush it. And then he'd go back out of the rotation in, you know, nonsense sort of Casey rotations. This season, he had the opportunity and he was just bad. 70 games, 15 minutes, 5 points per game, shot 40% from the field, only 29% from three. No rebounds, no assists, no steals, doesn't block shots, doesn't get to the line. It was just a real disappointment from Powell. And given the fact that if Van Vliet comes back, I just don't see where the path is for him to, you know, get back some of that value he had in his second season where he was, you know, quite strong. And a lot of his numbers really declined this season.
It'll depend on what we hear about Powell doing this offseason. Did he recommit himself or get into some kind of new program where he, you know, Nick Nurse essentially gave him a list of things to go out and do if he wants to come back and have a decent role next year? One of the issues with Powell is the fact that while he was struggling this whole season, the Raptors had a lot of other guys that we've already talked about stepping up, whether it was Fred VanVleet or DeLon Wright or CJ Miles doing well at doing what he's asked to do by stretching the floor as a shooter. There's OG Anunoby getting the starting small forward job. And there's just so many other options for Dwayne Casey to turn to rather than to exhaust trying to get Powell to find his groove. So you're looking at the same situation next year. Unless Powell comes in and he proves that he deserves the minutes, he's at risk of being outside the rotation a lot of nights.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And going looking at their plus-minus type stuff is really, really striking. This is a team that, in terms of on-off numbers, and I'm not going to include Malachi Richardson, who played 5 minutes, or Alphonso McKinney, who played 53 minutes on this team. Norman Powell had the worst on-off number on this team, minus 11. The next worst was Jonas Valanciunas, but it was negative 3.8. Like, that is a significant difference. Every other person on this team, in terms of their, not their net on-off, just their actual plus-minus, every other person was a positive on this team. Norman Powell was zero in his plus-minus. Every other person was positive, with Valanciunas, the lowest being Malcolm Miller in his limited minutes at 4.6. Powell was at zero. So he was by far and away, I believe, the worst player on this team this season, and rightfully so. He wasn't in the rotation. Struggled offensively, struggled defensively, can't hit threes. I was big on Norm Powell. I was expecting a step forward in his third season. They just signed him to a decently lucrative extension that Joshy Richardson, I think him and Norm Powell got the same contract, and the difference between the value of those players is astonishing. I think 4 years, 42 for both guys, and you could say Richardson's underpaid by 40 million. You could say that Powell's overpaid by 30. That is an astonishing difference at this point for those two second-round guys to go in complete different directions. But the last guy I do want to talk about here, you did just reference him, and that is, of course, the Jedi, OG Anunoby, who assumed that starting role when Powell went down, never gave it back. He's still only 20 years of age, only 20 minutes, 6 points, 2.5 rebounds, 0.7 assists, 0.7 steals, and 0.2 blocks, 47 from the field, 63 from the line, and 37% from three. There was a couple of things that was interesting about OG. He's a guy that came in, and I really loved his statistical translations because he's blocked a shit ton of shots in college. He got lots of steals. The rebounds were really strong from him. But what we saw this season was a little bit different. He started hitting threes, which he wasn't able to do before, but he didn't block any shots. I think it took him about 3 months to get his first block shot for the season. And the other thing that he was able to do, he showed a level of passing skill, which I hadn't really, you know, associated with him during his time in Indiana. I think that OG can have top 100 seasons. Of course, the offensive level has to increase, only a 12% usage rate. The efficiency was strong. It continued to be strong. His three-point shooting started out well. It finished strong, 46% over his final 24 games. But he has to get that steal rate and block rate up to a level that approximates what he did in college for him to be that top 100 guy. But I do have pretty good faith that he can do it, and I think he can round out the assists that he is able to provide as well.
Yeah, it almost feels like the Raptors asked OG to stay in his box defensively this year, just don't make mistakes. You know, do the right things, be in the right positions, but don't try to reach. Don't try to do too much where you're going to get called for fouls. Although, I don't know, it doesn't necessarily, that's just me wanting to build the narrative maybe. There's a lot to like about his field goal percentage, the growth of it over the course of the season, his three-point percentage and the growth of that over the course of the season, or the fact that he showed an ability to hit three-point shots at a high clip or at a good percentage. OG has a very intriguing game. He's somebody who you know is going to be a contributor on the defensive end, whether or not that's showing up with big defensive numbers like blocks and steals and rebounds. He is making an impact there. That's evident when you watch the games. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops statistically, but OG's a talent that is pretty much undeniable, so he's going to be out there on the court and given the opportunity to show that he can do more and more.
Yeah, the interesting point you bring up there about those defensive numbers and him playing more conservative, because in college, per 40 minutes, in both of his seasons, he averaged over two steals and over two blocks per game. Now, it's never going to translate exactly that way, but he was well down. And if he starts, and we saw how well he was able to play defensively on LeBron James, nobody can stop LeBron, but there are very few guys who can at least do something to bother him. And OG is one of a very small handful of guys who's able to do that. Clearly the only guy on this team who's able to do that. And that's a clear positive. He is going to get minutes. He is going to do that. If he develops the passing, the three-point shot continues, and I think you'll see his usage continue to grow over the course of the next 3 to 4 seasons. And I think we'll see as he gets more confident there and more used to playing in an NBA defensive scheme. And when he's not recovering from an ACL injury, which he was this season, I think we'll see those block rates and steal rates go up. And he has got, maybe it's only a 10% chance, but I think he has got legitimate top 40 type fantasy upside. Small chance, but there are not many guys where you can look at and go, well, he can get there. I think OG can. It's an unlikely outcome, but he can get there with that combination of rebounding, improved passing, big steals, big blocks, efficiency threes. There's a lot there to work with. It's just, it's got to all come together, and maybe it does take a little bit of time for that all to coalesce.
Agreed.
Cool. I'm glad you agree. Now, Kyle, I reckon that'll wrap us up with the Raptors. We don't need to talk too much Bebe or CJ Miles or Lorenzo Brown. They're pretty much who they are at this point. But it was good to have you back on. That is the last of the season recap podcast that you were doing with me. But you are going to be back on tomorrow, and we're going to be doing a mock draft as we run through the NBA draft and assuming the roles of GMs for different teams. So I look forward to speaking to you then, and look forward to you making some well-rounded selections.
Yeah, man, that tomorrow show is going to be a lot of fun doing the draft.
Can't wait to get that going. Make sure you guys are listening to this. And the best way to make sure you never miss an episode is to subscribe. Do that on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or on YouTube. Give us a review, 5 stars, give a thumbs up, leave a comment on YouTube, all that great stuff. Kyle, thank you once again. Go follow him on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA and me at RedRock_Bball. Kyle, thank you.
Thanks for having me on, Josh. You have a great day.
I will attempt to. It is absolutely freezing here, but my feet are a little numb, but that's nothing compared to the coldness that you guys suffer, so I'll shut up and stop complaining. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Serge Ibaka.